Chapter 17 The Coogan's battered prow was riding heavily over the steep wavelets the Zamjan tributary sent rushing down its length towards the Julif. Lorry could feel the length of the light trader boat exaggerating each pitch as they drove against the current. After 4.5 days, nothing about the Coogan bothered her any more. It creaked continually. The engines produced a vibration felt throughout every timber. It was hot, dark, airless, and cramped. But enforced routine had made it all inconsequential. Besides, she spent a lot of time lying inertly on her cot, reviewing the images the eagles Abraham and Catlin provided her. Right now the birds were 6 kilometres ahead of Coogan, gliding 500 metres above the water, with just the occasional indolent flick of a wing needed to maintain their flight. The jungle on either side of the swollen river was choked with mist from the rain that had just fallen, swan-white wisps clinging to the glistening green trees like some kind of animate creeper. There was no understanding the jungle's immensity, Lorry thought. The sights she saw through the eagles brought home how little impression the settlers had made to the Julif Basin in 25 years. The timorous villages huddled along the river banks were a sorry example of the human condition. Microscopic parasites upon the jungle biota, rather than bold challengers out to subdue a world. Abraham saw a ragged line of smoke staining the sky ahead. A village cooking pit, judging by the shape and colour. She'd certainly had enough practice over the last few days to recognize one. She consulted her Bitech processor block, and the visualization of the Zamjan eclipsed the image from the eagles. A vast 400-kilometer river in its own right, the broad tributary, was the one which the Qualheim emptied into. Inertial guidance coordinates flicked round. The village was called Oconto, founded 3 years ago. They had an asset planted there, a man by the name of Quentin Montrose. "Lorry," Darcy called, "I think there's another one. You'd better come and have a look." The visualization withdrew into the Bitech processor. "I'm on my way." She opened her eyes and looked out through the nearest slit in the side of the rickety cabin wall. All she could see was the grizzled water being lashed by the squall. Warm droplets ran along the inside of the roof, defying gravity, before they plopped down on the cots where she and Darcy had spread their sleeping bags. There was more room, now a third of the logs had been fed into the insatiable hopper, but she still had to squirm out through the Buchanan's cabin and the galley. Gail was sitting at the table on one of the special stools that could take her weight. Packets of freeze-dried food were strewn across the greasy wood in front of her. "What would you like tonight?" she asked as Lorry hurried past. "Doesn't matter." "That's typically thoughtless. How am I supposed to prepare an adequate meal for people who won't help? It would serve all of you right if I was to do nothing but boil rice. Then you'd all moan and complain. I'd be given no peace at all." Lorry gave her a grimace smile and ducked through the hatch out onto the deck. The fat woman disgusted her, not just her size, but her manner. Gail Buchanan surely represented the antithesis of Edenism, everything her culture strove to distance themselves from in human nature. Rain was pelting down on the little wheelhouse's solar cell roof. Darcy and Len Buchanan were inside, hunched against the drops which came streaking in through the open sides. Lorry dashed the 4 metres round to the door, drenching her loose grey jacket in the process. "It'll be over in a minute," Darcy said. Up ahead, the end of the steel rain clouds was visible as a bright haze band surmounting the river and the jungle. "Where's the boat?" she asked, screwing her eyes against the stinging rain. "There." Len raised a hand from the wheel and pointed ahead. It was one of the big paddle boats used to take the colonists upriver, slicing imperiously through the water towards them. It didn't pitch about like the Coogan, its greater mass kept it level as the wavelets broke against its side and stern. Smoke streamed almost horizontally from its twin stacks.
"Dangerous fast, that is," Len said, "especially for these waters. Plenty of fault twine about. Catch a bundle of that in the paddle, and she'll do her bearings a ton of damage. And we're heading into the snow lily season now as well. They're as bad as fault wine when they stick together.